Well, hello again, faces of God. You know, I wonder about you more than you probably know. I wonder about you frequently, wondering how you're doing and how you're feeling and what you're needing. And I know a lot of our leaders here at Unity wonder the same questions. Every week when I begin my talk, it begins with a process of wondering about you. Where is your heart now? Where is your soul now? What would benefit you the most? One of my practices for about the last year pretty regularly is to dialogue with the divine feminine within me and to ask questions about this week's topic or whatever else might be on my heart or mind. And so when I asked about wonder, I was quite surprised when suddenly the tables were turned and the divine feminine exclaimed, "Oh, one of my favorite topics, wonder!" And went on to say, as it was written through my hand on the page, "I wonder about life. I wonder what it feels like to have a body where I can touch and hug and kiss and hold, to have hands and feet, hands to create and shape and mold in the world and to love and to uphold. I wonder what it's like to touch life with sensations and energy through skin and bones. I wonder what I would do knowing as I do know now as a spirit if I were a body. Knowing the limitlessness of life itself. Knowing how much more there is, you are. If I were embodied now, I could, I hope, remember to lift myself up from the physical density of the physicality and be able to deliver my gifts into the world. If you only knew the gift that you have by having a body, the gift that you have of your very essence, your spiritual essence, how would you spend your precious time on earth then? How would you create, or how could you create the world and your life anew with so much ease and so much less struggle? I wonder what you would do," she asked. Well, all of that humbled me and inspired me at the same time. I began to imagine a Venn diagram. You know, the Venn diagram that has a circle. The one circle would represent our physicality and the other circle representing our spirituality and how those two begin to merge on top of one another in a Venn diagram. And wonder could be that thing in the middle, one of the many things that overlaps there. If because that was where the divine feminine met me in that sense of overlap and then changed places with me in that moment that surprised me, I was able to bear witness then to the life and the wonderings of spirit itself. And then we blended back together. What a wonder it is, really, to be a spiritual being having a human experience. In so many ways, we can wonder about that. How much we enhance our human experiences when we begin to engage this idea of wonder, wondering about spirit, wondering about ourselves, wondering about each other and life in the greater world. We are in the midst of the season for nonviolence right now. It's a time of peace and of love that is marked by the life and the assassinations of two great spiritual leaders who really embodied this idea of nonviolence and peace and love. They are, as you probably well know, Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. They practiced the transformation of inequalities, of violence, of difficulty, of conflict, through the ideas of peace, peaceful soul force. King said of Gandhi, he was the first person in history to lift the love ethic of Jesus above mere interaction between individuals to a powerful and effective social force. To guide our way through this series, we're going to use the revolutionary love compass of Valerie Carr. She is a woman of the Sikh faith. She is an activist, a filmmaker, and an author. So if we take a look at this compass, you can see that it has three primary sides. The idea is that you point the compass in the direction of whoever it is that you want to love in the moment. Maybe you're loving others. Maybe you're loving your opponents. Maybe you're loving yourself. You see that there are also rings for each one, so when you're focused in on a particular direction, there are certain ideas that help you, and there's not necessarily in linear order. You can choose any one of those at any time. So if we are loving others, we do that through wonder, through grief, through fight, and loving our opponents through rage, through listening, and through reimagining. And loving ourselves, she uses the metaphor of birth itself. Breathe, push, transition. So we'll touch on some of these ideas that are in the rings throughout this next 5 weeks in our series. And teach ourselves in the process the use of the power of revolutionary love. To love ourselves, to love others, and to love those that we might deem our opponents at any given time. We know that's a fluid term, but not our enemy so much. We don't go there so far, but sometimes there's an opposing force, isn't there? And that's what we're working with. In Valerie Carr's book, See No Stranger, a memoir and manifesto of revolutionary love, she writes this about wonder. Wonder is where love begins, but the failure of wonder is the beginning of violence. Once we stop wondering about others, once we no longer see others as a part of us, we disable our instinct for empathy. And once we lose empathy, she says that we can do anything to someone else and we can allow anything to be done to someone else. Our institutions, many have been built to be first prioritizing the interest of a certain group and forgetting about or even working against the interests of other groups. And those institutions, the way that they were built, absolutely depend on a failure of imagination, a failure to imagine us as one, a failure to imagine our wholeness and our interconnectedness, a forgetting, actually, of the truth of who we are, and all of God's wondrous and beautiful and diverse expressions. You know, even through our religious institutions that have been built on edicts of love, like love thy neighbor as thyself, even through those institutions, we have perpetuated and repeatedly cast out others, whoever we deem as others, or kept them at bay, our neighbors, if they look or believe differently than us. In the book, Valerie tells a story. She describes herself as a brown-skinned girl of the Sikh faith. She had plenty of experiences growing up in small-town Clovis, California, of having prejudice against her, both as a Sikh and as a brown-skinned girl. She said that everyone around her was pretty much white and Christian. She tells a story that, and a little bit of background. She and her family came to Clovis in 1913 when her great-grandfather purchased some land who had immigrated from India, and the family had been there ever since that time. But surrounded then with people who had different beliefs and exclusionary beliefs was really challenging. One day, Valerie and her best friend Lisa were sitting in the library like 14-year-old girls do, writing notes to one another and giggling and just really feeling the love and the connection and the joy between them. When suddenly Lisa looked at Valerie and said, "Valerie, I can't wait till Judgment Day. It'll be you and me and all the good people." And Valerie's heart fell. And she said, "Lisa, you know I'm not Christian, right?" And Lisa's face went pale and she said, "Well, I thought Sikhism was a sect of Christianity." And Valerie said, "No, it's not." And the bell rang. It wasn't too long after that, And in that space between this time and the time with a group of friends, that Valerie reflected, you know, it wasn't Lisa's fault. It was the teachings that she was being given. She said, I was a brown girl and a Sikh, and it was a problem that neither of us could solve. Shortly after that group conversation, there was a group conversation that happened with a group of friends at school, including Lisa. And Valerie realized that in the course of the conversation, they were all talking about what happens after death and that they were aiming the conversation toward a conclusion. When Valerie finally said to the group, do you all think I'm going to hell? She said they all got quiet and looked down at their shoes. Except for Lisa, who looked her in the eye. And both of their eyes welled up with tears. And their friendship ended right there. So as we take all of that into our hearts, let's move into music, into song. This song by Jan and JD, I Believe This Belongs to You.
I believe this belongs to you. I once heard a powerful story about a man who stood in his truth with such conviction in who he was that he would not be moved. Someone stepped out of a crowd and said, are you Martin Luther King? He said, yes, I am. And the well-dressed man spit on him. Then King took out his handkerchief and wiped the hate from his suit. He gave it back to the man and said, I believe this belongs to you. I will lift you up and do what I can do. I see your heart and I know your pain. I have been there too. I will hold you while you do what you have to do. I am clear who's standing here. I believe this belongs to you. I once had a powerful story I used to carry around. I thought it was you all this time. I held my spirit down, but now I know the truth, who I came here to be. You are my angel in disguise, not my enemy. So I thank you for the part you've played in this dance we've had to do. I give you back your own true love. I believe it belongs to you. I will lift you up and do. Can feel your pain. I have been there too. I will hold you high while you do what you have to do. I give you back your freedom now. I believe it belongs to you. Sing with us. I will lift you. I have been there too. to you. I give you back your own true love. I believe it belongs to you.
Wonder is an admission that you don't know everything about the other. Valerie's friends, that whole group, Lisa and the rest of them, had stopped wondering about Valerie. They had decided that they knew her fate and had no more to learn. Have you ever stopped wondering about someone? Maybe even somebody that you really loved. It happens. Sometimes it ends a relationship when we stop wondering about the other. Or maybe you find that in the everyday ruts and routines of long-term relationship, you think you know everything about the other, and you stop wondering. You stop being curious about your beloved. Have you wondered about somebody close to you lately? And I don't mean, I wonder about you. I mean, I wonder about you. I wonder what makes you tick. I wonder what you're really all about. I wonder about the layers of your heart and the expressions of your truest self. I wonder what it's like to be you. Have you ever met somebody who's different from you and you just completely dismissed wondering about them? You decided in your mind, you put them in a certain category, a certain group that you already knew everything you needed to know, and you shut the door and didn't wonder any longer? We all do that. We've all done it at least one time in our lifetime, if not many times, in many different ways. This habit that we have all taken on contributes greatly to inequality, to injustice, to violence in our world. If only we could switch, and we can, to wondering. When we do, when we start to wonder about others and the world around us, we can make that great turn to greater equality, to greater justice, to more peace. And we do it simply through this act. This practice, really. The primal reflexes of our mind is to do just what I said a moment ago, to sort. And so in those primal reflexes, we will, with that reptilian part of the brain, sort quickly, us and them. And there will be a sense of fear of other that can come from that experience. It's in our DNA. It's part of the civilizations that have come before and that we still live and breathe now. The difference is we can make a conscious choice to do differently. We can retrain our brains. We all have implicit biases. It's okay. That's part of what, in these conversations, like the class we have going on about raising racial consciousness, that's part of what we talk about. You know, let's just admit it. We're all part of the problem. And then we can get past all the defensiveness of, I'm not racist, or I don't have bias, or I'm not prejudiced. And it's like, yeah, we all are. So let's just move together and stop resisting that, because we can make no progress if we keep saying that about ourselves. We drop the defenses and we open ourselves up. There's actually been studies about brain imaging where if they show the picture to a person that is different from them long enough for the person's brain to comprehend, the person can then see that there is a human being attached to that face. And just by wondering about something super simple, like, I wonder what that person has for dinner, the fear dissipates in the studies. So what if you just took that on? I'm going to move about the world, and every time I see somebody different than me, I'm going to breathe, and I'm going to ask myself, I wonder what they like to have for dinner. And that fear can fall away, and we can begin to build the bridges, heart to heart, and soul to soul, and mind to mind, that will rebuild and reimagine the way that we move about the world. What is your story? That's a game I like to play. Last weekend, Brenly and I rented a tent cabin for Valentine's Day weekend, and there were couples everywhere, but it was really the perfect COVID place to go, because everybody was in their own little space, and we were, you know, hundreds of yards away from the people around us. But it was kind of fun just sitting by the campfire and saying, hey, what do you think their story is? Couple walking by down the road, and to begin to wonder about them, to wonder who they are and how they met and how they show up in the world and what's going on in the dynamic of their relationship. The game got really interesting when a little further away from us, there was across the way an interracial couple who was playing the game Jenga. Jenga is a game where you have these, in the lawn version, you have these large pieces, 54 wooden pieces, that you build a tower, and then each player takes a turn in pulling one of those pieces out until the tower falls. And so the question became, as we watched this interracial couple building the tower and taking the pieces out, what's it like to be you? What's it like to be you interacting with these kinds of institutions that one maybe piece of wonder at a time we could cause to fall completely and rebuild in love and oneness? What would that be like for you, for us, for all of us? These simple questions, what's your story? What do you like to have for dinner? What's it like to be you? Can become our practice of seeing no stranger. Valerie Carr uses this one. You are a part of me I do not yet know. A statement to hold with us in our hearts. To know that truth as we observe and behold and meet and greet or see others. You are a part of me I do not yet know. To take that into our homes with the people that we are closest to. And to speak that truth to us, to ourselves, when we maybe are feeling a little upset or judgmental or critical. You are a part of me that I do not yet know. It brings us back to that truth of oneness, which is actually the first utterance of the scriptures in the Sikh tradition. On the path of revolutionary love, as we say this to ourselves and we see no stranger, and these practices cause us to wonder more and more about one another, we can return to one another where relationships have been broken in the past. In fact, Lisa and Valerie have reconnected. Lisa reached out to Valerie unexpectedly 15 years later with an apology. Her notion of Christianity has expanded to be inclusive. She understands now what she didn't understand then, a little bit more about that edict of love and oneness. And in the end, Valerie says, we learn that love is the way, the truth, and the light. Many traditions, especially indigenous ones, really know this idea of interconnectedness. In Africa, Ubuntu is the term that means I am because you are. I exist, my very existence, I am because you are. Or in the Mayan tradition, in Lakesh, you are my other me. You are my other me. Isn't that beautiful? If we begin to know these kinds of things in the cells of our beings, what a difference it will make in the joy and the engagement of our own life and in the world that we make together for everyone. These practices open us to others and return us to others, but they also return us to ourselves, to our truest selves. They bring us back to that innate divinity that loves to wonder, as I learned from the divine within me. Because we are wonder made. We are, as a humanity, the elements of our essence are made of stardust. Isn't that incredible? I mean, that is something to wonder about, that we and all human beings are made of the cosmic substance of stardust. If that doesn't light you up, I don't know what does. That a lightness, whatever that word is, being alit with that sense of awe, that sense of curiosity about the cosmos and our place in it together. So if we so choose, we can see no stranger. And by doing so, we'll come to know more of ourselves through the parts of others that get reflected back to us, that we mirror to one another in this great prism of beautiful diversity that is the oneness of the creation itself. Let's remember that we are uniquely expressed oneness. And while we behold the beautiful and diverse faces of God and expressions of life, we go about the world seeing no stranger with this practice of these kinds of questions. What's it like to be you? You are a part of me that I do not yet know. Let's know this together. Let's speak our affirmation, and let's really work it together throughout this week. So our affirmation together: I see no stranger, for we are one. You are a part of me I do not yet know. So it is. Blessings to all of you, faces of God.